The Beatles have had such a profound impact on modern music. Since their first hit in 1964, generations have scrutinized their every song. Some of the biggest conspiracy theories are directly tied to the Beatles. Were they a part of a government conspiracy to undermine civil rights? Did Paul McCartney know who killed JFK? And did they put secret messages backwards to turn youth into Satanists?
One of the most heart-wrenching rumors surrounding the Beatles is the love triangle between John Lennon, Paul McCartney, and their openly gay manager, Brian Epstein. Now, after a lifetime of denying rumors of same-sex attraction in the Beatles, Paul McCartney recently landed a bombshell, stating that he and John Lennon did, in fact, come together right now, but not over Brian.
Today, we take a look at the secret gay lives of rock and roll legends from the UK. The Beatles, David Bowie, the Rolling Stones, and Queen's Freddie Mercury, who may not have been as gay as everyone remembers.
What really happened when Bowie's ex-wife Angela found him naked in bed with Mick Jagger.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Feast of Fun is made possible because of fabulous people just like you. Thank you. Become a member and support this show at feastoffun.com/plus.
Y'all, it's quite raunchy when you think about it. Said Paul McCartney.
Did he actually say raunchy?
Raunchy. It's quite raunchy when you think about it.
Mm.
Now, you know, Paul McCartney for years has denied the fact that there was anything gay about John Lennon. Mm-hmm. Despite that, a lot of people have written books and films about John Lennon's bisexuality. Mm-hmm. And the fact that John Lennon loved to spark curious rumors, and even one time posed in a very curious photo with him, Andy Warhol, and his wife Yoko Ono with their hands down each other's pants.
Ooh.
So it was quite a shock and surprise when Paul McCartney, promoting his latest album, because that baby, he don't not quit. He has given new meaning to "I Get By With a Little Help from My Friends." He just recently said in GQ magazine that he and John Lennon, when they were teenagers with other friends, masturbated together before the pair became a world famous Beatles.
Mm-hmm. It was just a group of us. And instead of just getting roaring drunk and partying, I don't even know if we were staying over or anything. We were all just in these chairs and the lights were out and somebody started masturbating. And so we all did.
So it was McCartney, Lennon, maybe three of John Lennon's friends. Mm-hmm. And then when this would happen, they would scream like female icons of the
Bridget
time.
Bridget Bardot.
And they're like, yeah. And they would
Mamie
masturbate.
Van Doren.
Yeah. Marilyn Monroe. Who
Mae West.
They were masturbating Mae West.
And then when John called it quits, because he was always the leader, right? He would say, Winston Churchill, and nobody had a boner. You know, if you were still
poor Winston
Churchill. If you were still like hard by then, you had to get off to Winston Churchill.
And I guess later on in the interview, he said that didn't stop there. So when they were at the Beatles and they were touring, if one band member brought a lovely lady into their hotel room, that they often would participate in orgies or love-ins. Now, Paul McCartney says they weren't really orgies in his recollection. Mm-hmm. They were more like sexual encounters of the celestial kind.
Which meant they were on drugs? Is that what it was?
Well, I've been in experiences like that. And I think as Westerners, we have a very hard way of describing affection and sexual activity that involves people without labeling it gay or straight. And Paul McCartney,
yeah, bro.
The Beatles were ahead of their time. The Beatles introduced the world to music. They sparked the modern music industry. They sparked record labels. They transformed how we think about music. And the idea of sitting around and listening to music recreationally was something that the Beatles inspired in a whole new generation of people. I remember as a kid, some of the very few, you know, albums that my mother would play that were English albums were the Beatles. And me and my sisters would lip sync to "Will You Still Need Me? Will You Still Feed Me When I'm 64?
And what is the answer to that to your sister?
Absolutely. So the Beatles, like, you know, were some a group that it's hard even to estimate, just like Shakespeare or, you know, Elvis, you know, these are creative people who have had a profound impact on culture, partially because of British imperialism, partially because of the need to sort of, quantify and co-opt, African-American music at that time period, but they still influenced tremendously. And as one of the, probably arguably some of the most commercially successful musicians of all time, they sacrificed it all time and time again. So it's understandable that through their career as nonconformists and, you know, Paul McCartney saying, "We were sexual nonconformists too." That whenever the rumors of their manager, Brian Epstein, who was gay, came bubbling forth or in books and films, they would always deny it, but not anymore. At least in this interview, he doesn't really talk about Brian Epstein.
Well, yeah, it's not the focus of this because, well, we'll get to more of the Epstein stuff later. But, you know, with Paul McCartney, he is trying to sell an album. And so I think, you know, gay stuff kind of titillates. And what's a little wank among friends, right? After all these many years.
Well, I think it's part of it is that we don't really because John Lennon was unfortunately assassinated in his youth and taken away from us at the height, you know, really of his creativity and his maturation as an artist, as a musician, that we really have a lot of hard times understanding who John Lennon was. And John Lennon had a nervous breakdown in 1963. He and his girlfriend, Cynthia Powell, had a baby named Julian Lennon, the Julian Lennon, right?
Right.
And his manager, Brian Epstein, who probably was in love with John Lennon, was furious about the birth. Like a jealous lover, not like a angered manager.
And so they hid the baby, right? And
he helped wife. John Lennon to get a secret marriage to Cynthia and to hide with the understanding that he would help cooperate if John Lennon would keep it a secret. And to deal with the heat of that, because, you know, there were speculations of the tabloids even back then. They went on vacation. They sent the rest of the band to the Canary Islands. And John Lennon and Brian Epstein together went on vacation to Spain and hung out in gay cafes, cruising men.
And John Lennon even like talked about it, saying we'd spend all day there and I would just sit there and act faggy. And Brian would go out and pick up men on the floor.
He said it was almost a love affair, but not quite. This is John Lennon in his own words. It was not consummated, but it was a pretty intense relationship. The 1991 film The Hours and the Times explores this mythical vacation where John Lennon struggled with his sexuality. Brian Epstein often was called the real fifth Beatle by John Lennon and was delighted in mocking Epstein's sexuality. There's a rumor that holds that during the recording of "Baby, You're a Rich Man," he sang versions of the song saying, "Baby, you're a rich fag Jew." John Lennon often made sarcastic comments about Epstein's homosexuality to his friends and to Epstein's face. But no one outside the group was ever allowed to comment. One of their friends, Ian Sharp, who went to art school with John Lennon, once made a sarcastic remark about Epstein saying, "Which one of you Beatles does he fancy?" Sharp was sent a letter by Epstein's office 2 days later demanding a complete apology. Sharp apologized in print. And then was completely, for the rest of his life, cut off from the group.
Oh, wow. Well, what do you make of that relationship between John and Brian Epstein? Because, you know, a friend came forward and said John confessed that they actually
did have sex.
They went at it to some degree, right?
He gave him a—well, there's different recollections of saying that John Lennon let Brian Epstein give him a handjob. I'm thinking— You know, if I was a gay guy and I had a crush and I was with him alone in a hotel room and we're running a business together and we've hit this commercial success. I would probably not just give him a hand job. Yeah. I'd probably give him a blow job anal even.
Right. Well, this is what John said happened, according to his one friend, from a memoir that came out in like 1983, I think, which would have been a couple years after John's death was, John says, what happened is that Epi just kept on me one at a time until one night I finally just pulled my trousers down and said to him, oh, for Christ's sake, Brian, just stick it up my fucking ass then. And then Epstein said, like, I don't really, like, that's not my thing. I just want to touch you. So I assumed he just, like, you know, I don't know, you know, maybe he tickled him.
Well, you know, there, it's no, Brian Epstein made the Beatles.
Yeah.
The Beatles were much, at that time period, let's really think about that, you know, 1964 in the UK. There were thousands of young punk you know, lad groups doing covers of American rhythm and blues musicians in these clubs. And Brian Epstein developed a crush on with Paul McCartney and John Lennon.
Oh, you think it was an either or with him?
I think, like, he was definitely madly in love with John Lennon, but he fancied, you know, there's other recollections that said that he felt the appeal of the Beatles to these other sort of young youth groups was they were physically attractive, not just good musicians.
He was hot for them.
He was hot for them.
Well, Paul said that, like, the reason he thought he went to Spain, John went to Spain with him, was just because he wanted to be seen as the leader of the band. He wanted to be like, I'm going on vacation with you because I'm the one you're supposed to listen to.
Sure.
You know?
It was to gain influence with their management. And, you know, to the testament of Paul McCartney and the other Beatles, at the they allowed Brian Epstein to have unprecedented control of the group. They trusted him. To their own detriment, Paul McCartney and John Lennon lost a lot of their rights to their own music because they wrote these contracts that didn't go so well.
Yeah. But, you know, the thing is, though, too, so do you feel like John, like, used his sexuality with this guy, or it was like a romance kind of thing?
Well, it's interesting because you look at those photos of John Lennon at the time, and your gaydar goes off, right? You go, this is somebody, you know.
It looks like every other hipster you'd ever see in your life, really. They've all aspired to kind of have that look at that time, right?
Yeah. And you also have to remember that gay men or men who are caught having sex with other men in England at the time were imprisoned and tortured and castrated chemically. So there were a lot of consequences for being caught in that kind of behavior. And there was so the Beatles, you know, at their core were rebels. They were counterculturalists from the very beginning.
But also co-opting Motown culture.
Well, and I think, you know, they were innocently interested in covering songs by black musicians. You know, Chuck Berry was John Lennon's hero. And there's this really wonderful video on YouTube when John Lennon and Chuck Berry finally get to be together in one of those talk shows, you know, one of those variety shows, and they're performing Maybelline. And Yoko Ono just grabs the microphone and starts going, and Chuck Berry's reaction,
Splash.
Yeah. And Chuck Berry reacts like, what the fuck is going on? And John Lennon is just like, he is so mesmerized by his wife, Yoko Ono. And Yoko Ono is an extraordinary artist. And I think, you know, this is an interesting thing too, is that Paul McCartney and John Lennon for most of their lives had a love-hate relationship with the astounding success of the Beatles. They didn't want to be known for as the guys who made the Beatles. They wanted to be bigger than that. They wanted to have a more profound impact in making the world a better place.
Right.
And Paul McCartney was always fascinated with conspiracy theories to the point that he actually wrote music for a film about who really killed JFK. And that film never used his music. And nobody knows where this music is, or maybe Paul McCartney does, because the filmmaker felt that that Paul McCartney's music would ridicule or be silly in context of the very serious question.
Sure. That kind of makes sense. But I mean, it's also, you know, Paul McCartney, you would have to say yes to that. How would you not want to just go with that?
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
It just doesn't make so much sense to me.
Charles Manson, you know, for people who may not be familiar, was the head of a cult that kidnapped some very famous and rich and powerful women, and the Manson family murders. And, you know, Sharon Tate's, you know, they killed a pregnant woman with a baby, and they blamed it all on the Beatles' secret messages that they were backmasking.
And Helter Skelter, right?
Sure.
Because that was the album that he was like, he saw like race wars in it and thought, and you know, thankfully we don't have those, but sure, Trump would like that, right? So yeah, totally. Charles Manson was into the Beatles, and it kind of, there were so many books written about that kind of stuff and how he thought about it. And it was like, it's so, but it's the mind of a crazy man. It's somebody who's schizophrenic. So you like, it's Helter Skelter. Do you know what Helter Skelter is?
Helter Skelter is chaos. Well, but it's a biblical term, isn't it?
You know, like when you go to a water park and you have one of those slides, they have those like in the UK that are just like made out of wood, and that's called a Helter Skelter. So it's kind of a slide that's usually enclosed and in a tube, and it just kind of like,
Doesn't the term for the slide come from the Bible, or am I just misunderstanding?
I don't know anything. No, is there something from the Bible?
I mean, that's how I understood it.
No.
The ride is named after, you know, end times, basically. And that's how like Charles Manson interpreted is that the Beatles were inspiring him and his followers to murder the rich and powerful to urge end times to come.
But it's also a fun slide. Remember, kids.
the Beatles were rebels. The Beatles, you know, were successful, commercially popular musicians who mainstream counterculture. Mm. They mainstream African-American music. They mainstream Eastern mysticism. They mainstream the use of drugs and psychedelia for a whole new generation, to the point that you can argue that the Rolling Stones and other groups of their time, The Who, went in the direction of psychedelia and Eastern mysticism and African-American music because of the success of the Beatles. And even the Rolling Stones released their own album that was supposed to be like a follow-up or a response to Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Now, one time Paul McCartney was in a car accident, and a very serious car accident that almost killed him, and the tabloids were rumoring way back in the 60s that Paul McCartney had died and had been replaced by an actor who for the rest of his life, to the Paul McCartney we know today, isn't really the Paul McCartney that started out with the Beatles.
And they said there's all these illusions from it, from like badges that he wore, different things from their songs, and say like, oh yes, this points to the fact that he died. But it's just so ridiculous. You know what I mean? It would be hard to believe. But also too, like they have a rumor that says like he murdered every other Beatle and had them replaced too, right?
Well, before we get to that rumor, so Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band was a significant album in the Beatles' history because it was a creative departure from them. And it was an album that explored the idea, what if we became other people? Mm-hmm. What if we recorded a whole album, not as the Beatles, but as Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band? And so the opening sequence really is them as Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, and they introduce Paul McCartney as Billy Shears. And so a lot of conspiracy theorists say that that is actually the man who claims to be Paul McCartney's real birth name is Billy Shears. And then that rumor then later was flipped over where Paul McCartney was the one who actually had all of the Beatles killed and replaced with actors. Think about that. And the devil laughs. I feel like I sound like the Monster Energy drink lady who's like obsessing about the 666 symbol.
Looking way deep into it. But that's the thing, is people are just obsessed about them, right? And of course, there's all those genres of slash fiction out there. People have always romanticized the relationship between Paul and John, especially, you know, and then people have their favorites, you know, they have their Ringos, and then there's always that weirdo that would like George. But, you know, and even like Epstein's, you know, people think about that triad there.
Well, you know, Brian Epstein died tragically I think it was the age of 32 from an overdose of barbiturates, basically the same way as Heath Ledger, sleeping pills.
Yeah.
And he died in his sleep.
Well, Heath Ledger also had like a pneumonia too. But yeah, if you know, if your system's compromised and you take something like that, you know, it'll kill you.
6 months later, Britain decriminalized homosexuality. The Beatles were tied to a revolution in culture and in identity, in diversity that we're still feeling to this day. Their music was something that changed the world. Yoko Ono actually spoke at my graduation ceremony when I graduated from the School of the Art Institute in 1997.
What'd she have to say?
She said the Beatles made the world fall in love with music.
Oh, that's so true.
And you know, and I think there's a lot of like racism and sexism blaming the split up of the Beatles with Yoko Ono. But I think I can argue, and now in hindsight, that there was a very deep, intimate relationship between those four, but especially between Paul McCartney and John Lennon, and that was never really put into words. And, you know, Paul McCartney to this day, when he talks about his relationship with John Lennon, he breaks into tears. And you know, looking back on this revelation, a lot of their music actually does sound like gay love songs.
What do you mean?
You know, if you think about Come Together Right Now Over Me,
it's Bukkake.
It's Bukkake. I Get By With a Little Help From My Friends, mm-hmm. you know, A Hard Day's Night, Magical Mystery Tour. They all have, you know, you can now interpret them as masturbatory mm-hmm. or affectionate subtext of love between men, a love between close friends that didn't have a way to express mm-hmm. that otherwise.
So the Beatles are now gay. It always has been kind of gay, right?
Well, I think the Beatles, mm-hmm. I think Paul McCartney is in his twilight years, mm-hmm. In his senior years, and the world is able to embrace this now, and it's not, you know, challenging his money, and the money of his, the people who have survived. Mm-hmm. You know, it's him and Ringo Starr and Yoko
yeah,
Ono and
good.
And George Harrison's wife. Mm-hmm. I think it's Linda Harrison. They're the surviving family's money isn't being put into jeopardy by them admitting that there was more than just friendship there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people in the forums are saying, like, do we have the right to out people after their death? Like Nell Carter was outed mm-hmm. by her girlfriend wife.
Well,
after
you
her
can't
death.
Slander the dead.
Sure.
Right. So is, you know, and is gay being gay slander?
Well, the question is it ethical to out somebody when they're alive? No. But mm-hmm. when they die, is it ethical to do so?
I think so. I think you have a lot of leeway there. I think it's okay. Unless you think there's going to be people that are going to be really harmed by it. And in this day and age, if you're harmed by thinking about John Lennon or Paul McCartney as being gay, then, you know, you're a douchebag and you need to change how you feel about things.
Because
right?
it's not harmful. And,
no,
and
not
certainly,
harmful.
Like, the Beatles wouldn't be as significant. They would have been people who had been as open to embracing other cultures and philosophies and been the rebels that they were mm-hmm. if there was not a little bit of LGBT in mm-hmm. them.
Yeah, because for you to make a band like that, you have to have gay people in it, right?
Well, it's not about
queer,
gay or straight.
Right?
It's about embracing
the full
the
same
experience. Sex affection that all people have. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of LGBT in you and me and everybody.
And in the Beatles.
And now in the Beatles.
Let's talk about 10,000 BC and Ringo Starr. Raquel Welch, right? I mean, gosh, wow, what a
Ringo
movie.
Ringo Starr wasn't married. He was married to Catherine Bach.
Oh, that's who it was, yeah, Catherine
Bach.
Not
Raquel Welch. But she looked like her a lot.
Right. But what was Raquel Welch in? Was she in a different version of 10,000 BC?
She made a bit of another caveman movie.
She was a caveman somewhere. Yeah.
But, you know, Ringo Starr, I mean, they married beautiful women, mm-hmm. certainly. And, you know, it's like the question, like, you have to ask yourself, like, as mm-hmm. a gay man,
yeah.
you know, we have all these hookup apps and stuff. But if you had the ability to marry the most beautiful woman in the world, mm-hmm. or would you pursue that? Would you be able to do that? You know, and then sometimes it's like, you know, beauty is universal and extremely attractive people. Mm-hmm. Sometimes if you're not the sexual attraction, you don't normally swing that way. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you just find yourself overwhelmed by the connection mm-hmm. that you have with somebody who's very charismatic and very gorgeous.
Mm.
Queen's Freddie Mercury fell in love with a woman. He spent most of his life sort of betraying that love and testing that love. And at the end of his life, he willed all his money and his home and his estate to this extraordinary woman who loved him.
Mary Austin.
Mary Austin. Mm-hmm. And Mary Austin didn't want it. She was just there for him. She was heartbroken. But when she found out he was HIV positive, she dedicated her life to taking care of him in his final days.
Well, it's interesting how they came together, because like Freddie pursued her and he asked her out, but you know, he kept going out with all these men, and you know, like he turned out to be like quite a manizer. You know, he went through a lot mm-hmm. of men. He was a very sexual person, and so he was doing this, and he had this girlfriend, you know, and he said he loved her very much, but she just couldn't get down with that, so she's just like, you know, I'm out of here.
She was not out of there. She actually was pushed out by Freddie Mercury, and she stayed by his side for most of his life. When he came forward
so
as being HIV,
but then brought her back in.
He said he probably exaggerated a lot of the sexual shenanigans he did behind her back to get her to leave and to embarrass her. And
I think
when she finally sort of understood that, she came back and she was like gum on his shoe. Mm-hmm. You know, she did not leave him. Mm-hmm. She spent the rest of her life taking care of his mm-hmm. medical needs, his career needs. And at the end of his life, he said, I want to will my home, my estate, all my money, most of my money to you and to a foundation. Mm-hmm. And she said, please don't do that, because I am not capable of taking care of something that important. And he said, no, I'm going to do it anyways. Mm-hmm. And he gave her the keys to the car, basically.
And she did it.
Yeah.
And she still does it, you know?
And I think the movie that's coming out about Queen later this year is going to primarily explore that relationship. I think audiences are going to be very surprised to sort of learn about Freddie Mercury's deep feelings for this woman who really was his, you know, his right hand, right-hand woman.
It's a movie that they couldn't make without her, is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
it explores the sort of the making mm-hmm. of the group, but also mm-hmm. how he fell in love right. with this woman and how he betrayed her.
Yeah.
And you know, and I think I just, you know, when we're talking about like the Beatles and the relationships, mm-hmm. you know, it's a story that needs to be told. It's a story that would make a great miniseries.
Because, right. you know, when Sacha Baron Cohen talked to the guys from Queen about doing the movie, so I have my misgivings about the movie, because Sacha Baron Cohen he wanted to play Freddie Mercury.
That would have been a big mistake.
You know, 10, 15 years ago, I think it would have been great. You know, he talked to the guys and he said that the guy said that the movie's going to be so fantastic because, you know, it's going to show how this band really triumphed after Freddie died and how we kept on going. And the guy, Sasha, was like, that's not, nobody cares about that.
No.
They all care about Freddie and they care about that person. And that's your story. So I hope they listen to him. You know, I hope they listen to him. And so we get the movie we deserve. Right.
Mm-hmm. One of the most talked about rumors in my lifetime about, you know, rock and roll legends from the UK mm-hmm. is David Bowie and Mick Jagger's mm-hmm. relationship, whether it existed or not. David Bowie undisputably is the godfather of glam rock and the patron saint of outcasts. He brought queer urban culture to the mainstream in the 70s. His extraterrestrial Ziggy Stardust character was intentionally androgynous. And he, in his concerts, often paid tribute to Marlene Dietrich by dressing up as her mm-hmm. and speaking that Marlene mm-hmm. Dietrich voice.
Came out as gay in one interview.
In 1972, he came out as gay and said, I am gay. No two doubts about it. I've always been, even when I was David Jones.
And then just a few years later,
in 1976,
what happened?
He said in another interview for Playboy magazine that he was tired of talking about his sexuality and he came out as bisexual. But then later on in his life,
there was something like, I feel like I read it in the 90s or the 2000s. And he said, basically, like, he didn't say whether he was gay or he was straight. He kind of like denied it. He was ever any of that, that he's like, you know, I'm with women, basically. I'm with women.
I've only been with women and not really ever mm-hmm. been with men. In 1985, him and Mick Jagger came out with a single called, you know, a cover of Dancing in the Streets, mm-hmm. which, after seeing them sort of, you know, getting into each other's faces and coming inches close in that music video from making out, mm-hmm. A lot of people said Dancing in the Sheets more like it.
Mm-hmm.
And then Angela Bowie, after the divorce, after her gag order was lifted, she went on the Joan Rivers show. And with Howard Stern sitting next to her, they were asked whether there was any truth mm-hmm. to the rumors that David Bowie and Mick Jagger had sex with each other.
And she said she came in and saw them in her bed, and they were like completely hungover and wasted, and they were both naked in her bed. And she, like, there was people saying like, oh, she's just out of them. She said they're having sex. And then she kind of like, you know, played it to the side a little bit and pretend like it didn't happen. And then finally she's just like, you guys, like, listen, I never assumed that they didn't have sex. I'm not saying that they had sex, but that's the scene I walked into, and I just assumed they had sex. Maybe they didn't have sex. And she kind of left it at that. But of course, like, if you walked in, what would you think?
Well, she says that she does. She, in other interviews, said she didn't need to look to see if there was any lube, an open tub of KY.
She said, she's so straight. She says, yay, people don't use KY.
She said that she felt in her heart that they had sex together, mm-hmm. and she felt betrayed at that time.
Yeah. And, you know, a wife always knows. But you know who's gay for Mick Jagger? Mick Jagger's gay for Mick Jagger. Remember when we interviewed that guy? He was a director of a documentary. He made a documentary. I forget which documentary it was. He's in our archives, though. And he was involved in that movie, Bent. You know the movie Bent mm-hmm. that took place with the neo-Nazis. Clive Owen was in it. And he falls in love in the concentration camp. And before he goes into the concentration camp, he goes to this nightclub, and he sees Mick Jagger come down from the star all dressed like a woman and singing a song and playing this big old, like, Berlin Queen, because they were all obsessed. Like, David Bowie and Mick Jagger were obsessed with Berlin of the 30s.
Well, David Bowie mm-hmm. had fallen very addicted to all kinds of drugs, especially cocaine, and I guess he went to Berlin to try to dry up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where he sort of became obsessed with Germany's World War II.
Yeah, he was drawn
cabaret
to it.
Culture.
That's when he did
Just a Gigolo.
That movie, Just a Gigolo, mm-hmm. which you can listen to that podcast in our archives. But so the way that they got Mick Jagger to do this role, because he really, really wanted to do it, but they didn't have any kind of budget. So he did it for like $250,000 or something like that. But they also had to pay his travel expenses. And so, like, the travel expenses basically from what...
Bankrupted the film.
Yeah, they bankrupted the film is what this guy tells us. And so one of the things that cost him so much money is that he had to take a limo, like, all the way from, like, the south of France all the way to the UK to come see the film, which they had, like, some private screening for him in a small studio.
Was he like Aretha Franklin? He didn't want to take an airplane.
You know.
So he had to drive everywhere.
I'm guessing something like that. And so... he goes to the screen, he's watching the screening, and he sees himself up on the screen, and he gets up and he starts making out with himself on the screen. And they're all just like, what the fuck is happening?
When the Rocky Horror Picture Show was being turned into a film, amazingly, Tim Curry was not considered for the role. It was they wanted to give it to Mick Jagger. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the production, I guess it was the... And maybe, you know, Peaches Christ actually probably knows more about this than I do, but it's like, to my recollection, it's when films are being made, they have to be insured.
Oh, she would know more about that than you, yeah.
And so the film producers or 20th Century mm-hmm. Fox wouldn't insure Mick Jagger to play that role because of his shenanigans with that film in the past.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because he was just such an unholy terror. I think that one of the most, in fact, and correct me if I'm wrong, listeners, in my memory, in history of rock and roll, were the most trashed and expensive rooms up until, I think, Motley Crue did this in the 80s, was Mick Jagger trashing his hotel room to the tune of millions of dollars or something like ridiculous.
Wow.
And it's like he was an unholy terror. And part of it, I think, it's back to the Beatles. Like, all musicians in their lifetimes, especially the British musicians, all were in the shadows of these great giants. And Paul McCartney and John Lennon, you have to think about it, you know, these were all people as part of the same community. They all traveled in each other's circles. Mm-hmm. And, you know, imagine we know about the jealousy that drag queens have against each other, mm-hmm. and how they sabotage each other, mm-hmm. and how they tend to release things that are similar because they're always like trying to up one on each other or follow each other's footsteps. Those UK British musician sensations, you know, were always trying to do updo one each other. And homosexuality was this currency, this gender and sexual ambiguity that became something that they were all like trying to figure out. Should I be gay? Should I cross dress?
And you know, when you live a life like that, it's a very stylized life. You have a lot of very like people that have, you know, influential people in your life that are really putting a lot of things towards you. And a lot of those people happen to be queer.
If you get a chance to see the film Help, by the Beatles. It's a fictional take on what their decadent, extravagant life is like.
I haven't seen that movie in, God, 30 years.
It's ridiculous. And it does no plot. Everyone's terrible acting.
Are they all in an amusement park? Are they in an amusement park in that one?
The plot is just ridiculous. And they're, like, there's one scene that I remember where Ringo Starr has to place a phone call, and it's this elaborate maze of steps and ladders and bells and whistles, and all set to the background of this Indian music, and it's a ridiculous film. You know, the Yellow Submarine, you know,
that was so boring as a kid.
It was it's still boring as an adult, you know.
I haven't seen it in years,
but the animation was extraordinary. Mm-hmm. And these are films where they were like trying to explore the ideas of why is there pain and suffering in the world, and how the need to be perfect, the need to rule and boss other people over, mm-hmm. is the source of a lot of pain. And, you know, today in 2018, we see, you know, that a lot of right wingers, psychologically, Trump and Trump supporters all share that in common. They're very obsessed with wanting to have a perfect appearance. Mm-hmm. They like to boss and bully other people. And they feel like if somebody does well, then their success is not mm-hmm. as valuable. They want to push other people down, not just lift themselves mm-hmm. up.
You got a little bit of Facebook traction the other day because you posted on there about...
Well, something you said.
Yeah, it was something I said, that it seems like a lot of these super right-wing Trump supporters...
If they're LGBT.
If they're LGBT, have a lot of freaky plastic surgery or like Botox or like something's going on there. They look off.
Well, it's interesting, right? Because, you know, I want to support everybody to have the body and the look that they want to have.
Right.
But what's interesting about these LGBT right-wing supporters, and I'm thinking of that drag queen who was on CNN.
Elaine Lancaster.
Elaine Lancaster. When you see her out of drag, she has a lot of work done on her face. And from talking to Justin Jedlicka and other people who are advocates for plastic surgery, when the plastic surgery doesn't settle right, it looks off. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking that maybe these right wingers who are LGBT are also not as rich as they'd like to say they are, mm-hmm. but they feel that plastic surgery is something they want to do to look rich. Mm-hmm. So they get this low budget plastic surgery that doesn't settle right, and so they wind up looking like Jocelyn Wildenstein.
Well, it's hard to get it right, you
know.
To get it right, and so and less is more, and a good doctor who costs money is probably going to be like, don't do this. You know, but if you go to somebody who you know, you want to appear rich but maybe you don't have the money, you go to somebody who's probably not as good.
Sure.
Or maybe they just kind of looked really strange beforehand and wanted to look strange now. But a lot of people, they have this idea when they get plastic surgery is they want that look of perfection, right? And so they think of, you know, if you vary from my very narrow point of view, then it has to be corrected. And so they have to, and that's why they always want to correct other people too. And, you know, it's not about freedom with those people. It's about control.
So when you think about like the Beatles, you think about Paul McCartney, you think about the Rolling Stones, mm-hmm. you think about Mick Jagger.
Do you think about John Lennon?
And John Lennon.
Or not John Lennon, I'm sorry, Elton John.
Elton John, you know, all these guys share one thing in common. Besides being extremely rich and commercially successful at being musicians, which is like not only it's not like just winning the lottery, it's like discovering gold on another planet.
Yeah, it's being like hit by an asteroid or something of wealth.
Besides all that, they had everything to lose. And they consistently took a path that put their finances, their careers, their mental well-being, and their lives at risk. They were profound risk takers who over and over and over again were like saying crazy shit, doing crazy shit, mm-hmm. Who that was seen as illogical and rebellious at the time, and threatening to themselves. You know, the FBI had the CIA had was following John Lennon because they felt that he was going to undermine the United States.
Music
he was a terrorist.
Music can change the world. It really, really can. And so that they
I don't
were
think
really
music
afraid. Listen,
changes the world. I think rebellion but with she, art to de- mm-hmm. combined
right,
can
right,
change
right.
the world.
But you know, they were talking like at that point. You know, he was getting into these Eastern philosophies, and that just really threatened because people were like, oh my god, these are like Hare Krishnas. So
give peace a chance.
Yeah, you know, give peace a chance. It's like the military-industrial complex is not going to put up with that. So of course they're going to follow somebody around like that.
And I would imagine that Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr and George Harrison were pressured to maybe, you know, speak out or condone or, you know, to counteract John Lennon's progressive message of peace. Mm-hmm. But no, they doubled down and they released their own peace albums and their own countercultural projects. These were extraordinary people who expanded minds, and we are forever grateful for them, for the contributions they've given us, because they could have given us mm-hmm. business as usual. Mm-hmm. We could still be listening to what music was like. We could have, you know, and instead they expanded mm-hmm. so much.
And mm-hmm. now they've given us... Wait, you have to do it too because there were more than
okay,
one.
Yeah, that's right. But the reason right. I'm bringing this up okay. is that maybe all this is a little bit exaggerated. Mm-hmm. Maybe Paul McCartney, just like John Lennon, is a prankster.
He's peddling us some shit.
He may be just, you know, saying maybe I did it because I was cock hungry, and maybe I did it for a little publicity. We'll never really know.
I think, listen, I feel like if Paul McCartney's going to say that to us, I'm going to think that he's telling us his version of the truth. I'm going to say it's really going to happen. You know, and if he dupes me, you know, I'll see you in hell, Paul McCartney.
So we want to know from you guys, the listeners, like, yeah. You know, because some people are saying it's very comforting mm-hmm. for Paul McCartney to embrace his bisexuality mm-hmm. of his youth and that he deeply loved John mm-hmm. Lennon and not just mm-hmm. as a friend.
And this is like a huge fantasy for a lot of people. This is, you know, a huge fulfillment for them, because they've often, like, you know, people have written volumes and volumes of slash fiction where Paul and John just get it on for like long weekends on the road or something. And so, you know, for them, it's a validation, and it's like it's a dream come true. You know, and even like friends would be like, which one's hotter? Who would you kiss, or would you have a three-way with them? I mean, how many times have we sexualized the Beatles?
Sure.
You know? And John, we used to spend time in bed, hanging out, like naked with his wife.
But they were human beings, mm-hmm. and they were imperfect human yeah. beings. And you know, John Lennon was a very mm-hmm. good father, and yeah. Paul McCartney was kind of an asshole to some of his wives, mm-hmm. you know, and you know, these guys, probably the nicest of all the Beatles mm-hmm. was, and still is, Ringo Starr.
Is he the
he's the most humble of them mm-hmm. all, definitely.
Who's the hottest of them all?
John Lennon, yeah. hands down. But when I was a kid, I actually had a crush on Paul McCartney.
Mm-hmm. I think Ringo had some heat, too.
You know, I kind of resented Paul McCartney in some ways, and mm-hmm. I had a love-hate relationship with him because my father would cut my hair to look like Paul McCartney.
And not John Lennon's?
No. Well, like a Beatles. He said, I'm going to give you a Beatles haircut.
You did have a Beatles haircut. And my God. Will you put that in the album art today?
I don't know if I can find that photo.
Oh, I'm sure you'll find one. You totally have one.
But the situation is that my parents were really into the Beatles, mm-hmm. and they played Sgt. Pepper's all the time. Because mm-hmm. in some ways, like, you know, The Simpsons said mm-hmm. this is like, it's Maggie's baby mm-hmm. music.
See, whereas my parents are like, my mother was very proud that she never paid any attention to Elvis or the Beatles. She's like, I barely even know who they are.
And so, you know, when people say it's like Mark and I are kind of like, you know, Paul and John Lennon, I would say, you know, in any kind of close relationship, there definitely is somebody who is the eccentric, creative, and then there's the other one who tends to be more grounded, mm-hmm. more conservative. And I think you and I certainly, you know, we're not the Beatles of anything, but we certainly, there's a little bit of John Lennon in me, and there's a little bit of Paul McCartney in you.
Oh, I mean, a small, tiny, tiny, tiny bit. I mean,
just his penis.
When you look, when you look at that, just the talent is just out there. That it's just incredible.
I think we all have the ability to be as profound as the Beatles. And certainly the Beatles, there's no doubt about it that extraordinary musicians mm-hmm. have been ignored throughout mm-hmm. the course of their lives.
Not Madonna. She makes sure of that.
Yes. Extraordinary musicians have been ignored, but the Beatles were definitely at the right place in time. And there was an appetite for this kind of music to expand minds, and people needed a soundtrack to the changing times mm-hmm. of their day. Mm-hmm.
And they had the full support of the radio network here in the United States when they came through.
No, they didn't.
Yeah, they did pretty quickly.
After Ed Sullivan, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But beforehand, the Beatles were trying to break into American markets, and Capitol Records wouldn't release their music. So they signed with another album label called VJ Records. Mm-hmm. And then Capitol Records got into a lawsuit with them, which they eventually won, and they basically bullied VJ to hand over the publishing rights in the United States to them.
Okay.
So it was definitely Capitol Records wasn't jumping on the Beatles.
Did that set them back a year? But once they came in, they just reigned supreme. And of course,
you think of this as history is unstoppable, and it's not.
No, but my point is, what I'm saying is that there was a huge, that Motown sound was growing, and it was becoming so popular in the United States, and it was getting played everywhere. And the conservatives, their way of counteracting that was to, suppress that by celebrating this, what was known as the British invasion, which, the Beatles led, and other people, the Rolling Stone, they all came through that same kind of thing. A lot of them co-opting that kind of music and that style and making it more palatable to white audiences and, keeping the brother down. So
who was buying the albums is white teenage girls. Mm-hmm. They still back then to this day, if you want to sell a successful album, you appeal to teenage mm-hmm. girls. And RCA Victor Records, do you know who their top-selling artist was before Elvis got signed?
Liberace?
Eartha Kitt.
Ooh.
And Eartha Kitt was replaced by this Elvis Presley. Ooh. So she wasn't happy about that. I learned about that from her memoirs, Tuesday's Child. And so, there is something to be said about the wanting to co-opt the civil rights movement mm-hmm. by making, giving us white versions of these songs. And sort of the film, the musical Dreamgirls sort of explores mm-hmm. that idea quite beautifully. But at the same time, the Beatles were able to turn music into a multi-billion-dollar industry. Mm-hmm. At a time when no one was really getting significantly rich from music. And the way they did that is they took countercultural music of African Americans and packaged it with cute Moppet hairstyles
and it's still
British boys.
And it's still done today.
And part of it is because people want to buy music with mm-hmm. people they relate to. It's mm-hmm. not just the sound, it's also the voice. For mm-hmm. me, as a teenage gay boy, mm-hmm. I related mm-hmm. to Eartha Kitt more than I did to the Beatles.
There's some people that will listen to Taylor Swift solely on the fact of what she looks like. They wouldn't care what came out of her mouth. It wouldn't matter as long as they saw her in a video and knew that noise was coming from her.
So, I think we need to forgive.
Well, I do like her a little bit.
People for being superficial when it comes to their musical tastes, but at the same time, encourage people to seek out artists and sounds that aren't aligned with mm-hmm. their own experience to expand their minds. The Beatles did it. You can too. Mm-hmm. You can, one thing I just started and it's great to listen to at the gym is get into Bollywood music, which has mm-hmm. a lot of energy and is a really great sound. And, it's like, and sometimes if you think about Michael Jackson and what he brought into, in choreography and dance culture, he borrowed a lot from Bob Fosse, but Bob Fosse and a lot of these other artists were imitating Bollywood and mm-hmm. Bollywood choreography. And so a lot of the East has always influenced the West. Mm-hmm. We just sometimes not even aware of it. Mm-hmm. If you want to know what music will sound like 5 or 10 years from now, tune into those Bollywood stations on your streaming music devices.
You think so? You think we're going to go Bollywood?
Absolutely. Yeah, and in Bollywood, at the same time, let's not get ahead of ourselves. You know, the East also borrows heavily from the West. And sometimes you listen to this and you're like, this is a Kanye West knockoff, which is not even worth ripping off. But it's interesting to see how music styles from different cultures influence each other. K-pop is something that's really exciting. And again, it's something great to put on your music player. And, you know, just because the lyrics doesn't make sense to you, you can really react viscerally to the music.
K-pop is good when it's good, but when it's bad, you're just like, what is this I'm listening to? It can be just awful.
Sure. We want to thank you guys so much for listening to today's Feast of Fun podcast. Feast of Fun is made possible because of your financial support. Go to feastoffun.com/plus and access 15 years of extraordinary podcasts where we examine some of the more forgotten or overlooked aspects of pop culture and music.
Are you trying to age me? It is not 15 years of podcasts. We've been doing this podcast since February of 2005. How many years is that? That's like 13 and a half. We're on our 14th season.
Okay.
So we're on our 14th season. Now, coming up in February, that will be our 15th season. We are officially granddaddies of podcasting. And the best way to support your favorite podcasts is to make a one-time donation at feastoffun.com/donate. Like Fausta said, become a Plus member or visit our store at feastoffun.com/store.
Remember, folks, all you need is love and a hand job
from the one you love.
That's right.
Oh, it's a pleasure doing the show and talking about the Beatles with you. And for the listeners that's still there, I have some exciting news for you. We have an exciting guest coming up very soon.
Oh, how exciting are they?
He's very exciting. You know, we've been doing this podcast now, like I said, for, you know, we're in our 14th season. And we have somebody who's listened to the show since they were 19 years old. And now they're 33 years old.
Just like Jesus.
Just like Jesus. And he's going to come over and he's going to talk about his favorite times listening to
the highlights.
Feast of Fools, Feast of Fun. I mean, he goes way back. So some of his life highlights, I told him to put together a top 10 list, and we'll talk about all those things. So I invite you guys to all check in on that and walk down memory lane with us.
And he's a genetic scientist. So he's also going to weigh in on the future of body modification for trans people, for bodybuilders, and how to get a bigger dick or bigger tits without any silicone. The future looks good, honey, and the future's big.
And he's German. And he has an accent. And if you guys are fans of the TV show Victoria, he sounds like Prince Albert. And he won't be in a can.
He'll be
so
unleashed.
I won't have to let him out at all.
Oh, guys, thank you so much for listening.
Bye-bye.
Bye.